I will shortly leave the job that it has been the honour of my life to hold. The second female Prime Minister, but certainly not the last. I do so with no ill will, but with enormous and enduring gratitude to have had the opportunity to serve the country I love.
That was Theresa May resigning as Prime Minister earlier this morning. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bowles to discuss what happens next and what we can read into that resignation statement by the Prime Minister. Now, James, her call for compromise, that obviously was a reference to what, do you think?
She was calling for compromise essentially in and with Parliament to get a Brexit deal through. She is essentially saying, don't think any new Prime Minister can come in and say, right, this is what I want to do on Brexit, do it, Parliament, and succeed. I thought it was very telling that there was no mention at all of, I wish my successor well in their negotiations with the EU. She was essentially saying that this whole solution to this problem has to come from Westminster. That is essentially a massive pop at Boris Johnson, Dominic Raab, Esther McVeigh, Andrew Leadsom, all these people who talk about getting changes from Brussels to make the deal more acceptable rather than making changes here in Westminster to try and get a deal over the line.
Because I imagine, James, that the signature theme of her withdrawal agreement was that I have got as much as is humanly possible from Brussels. And by the way, Parliament, if you're voting against my deal, you're being naive. Don't think there's an improvement deal. So she's basically going out on that note, saying, yes, don't think any of you are going to get any better than what I got.
Yeah, it's almost like a question of the hustings for the next leader, I thought. I also think the massive irony in here is that Theresa May, after she lost the Tory majority in the 2017 general election, she never came and gave this message to her party. She never came and said, right, we've got a hung parliament now, so we can't get the full fat Brexit that we want. We're going to have to compromise on customs, compromise on this, compromise on that, because she was too politically weak to say that. And I think the story of her premiership, really, since she lost that majority, which is the defining event of her premiership, I think, is that she has been living hand to mouth, and she takes decisions to get through the day, and essentially the errors that create, they all accumulate. And that is what has led her into this impasse that she was so unable to find a way out of that she had no choice but to resign.
And Katie, what jumped out to you in that speech?
Well, I think what everyone is zoning in on is the point that she did seem to have quite a rare show of emotion for Theresa May near the end of it. So when it got to the point where she said she was the second ever female Prime Minister and she didn't think she'd be the last, and then went on to say it was an honour, it did feel as though that she was about to cry. And I think that she had managed to keep her emotions in check, probably through for all of her premiership and political career. And we often say she is robotic. She's been called the Maybot, and it seemed to be when she actually let her guard down, and it was very clear she didn't want to be resigning today. She hasn't wanted to cut her premiership short. She has been forced into this, you know, for many reasons, which obviously feel a very strong conviction on. But I think there was a sense that if she could have fought this, she would have. But it clearly got to the point where I think you had figures such as Jeremy Hunt yesterday, the foreign secretary, who publicly often sounds very supportive of her, basically suggesting that it was really time now for her to move. So I think the sense that you did get a sense that she didn't feel as though she had a chance to have the legacy she wanted as Prime Minister, that she wanted to be remembered for certain things and she hadn't. And I think that's why in part she spent quite a bit of that speech pushing what she likes to see as her domestic agenda.
Which is what?
Well, she touched on the burning injustices agenda, which really fell off the radar.
Let's listen to that part of her speech now.
But the unique privilege of this office is to use this platform to give a voice to the voiceless, to fight the burning injustices that still scar our society. That is why I put proper funding for mental health at the heart of our NHS long-term plan. It's why I'm ending the postcode lottery for survivors of domestic abuse. It is why the race disparity audit and gender pay reporting are shining a light on inequality, so it has nowhere to hide.
So, Katie, does she really have much of a legacy?
I think when it comes to domestic agenda, there isn't much to write home about. I mean, you have the NHS funding settlement, which is a big sum of money, but all the things that she she wanted to do. And the fact that she mentioned burning injustice is interesting, because when she gave that speech initially, soon after becoming prime minister, it was a speech that I think did capture a mood. It felt like a moment. But since then, she has failed to deliver on lots of those things. I think that she was trying, when she's talking about the race disparity audit, gender pay, to this idea that you're ending a postcode lottery on domestic abuse shelters. Mm. She's trying to piece together enough of an agenda that she could say that she has done something there. But I think the truth is she is joining an ever-growing list of Conservative prime ministers who have been brought down by Europe.
I think one of the other things about Theresa May, one of the other sadnesses of her premiership, is that, and we often, it's easy to forget this given how Brexit has been so all-consuming. In 2017, she attempted to change the nature of the Tory party. That manifesto was designed to make the Tory party far more of a Christian democratic party than it has been since the Thatcher years. And that manifesto bombed. And I think that there is a consequence there, in a way. And I think that's part, you know, in the same way that losing the majority denied her the chance to, made it so much more difficult for her to deliver Brexit and give herself a legacy in that respect. The failure of that manifesto made it much more difficult to give herself a domestic policy legacy, because it emboldened everyone in cabinet who wanted to argue against her on various domestic issues.
And James, what can we expect from the runners and riders now? I was looking at the bookmakers' odds earlier on. Boris Johnson is way ahead, very short odds at 6-4. The next most likely is Dominic Raab at 6-1. Now, bookmakers are no clairvoyants, as we get reminded every time there is a major event like this. But it does seem as if somebody wants to stop Boris Johnson, they'd better get their campaign running now and get it running fairly quickly.
But Boris Johnson is undoubtedly the candidate with the big mo right now. If he can make it into that final two, I think it is very hard to see how he is stopped with the members, especially in a contest that we expect not to be very long. You know, I think that the ballot papers will go out to the party members probably 2 weeks after the final two are chosen.
Mm-hmm.
And given that most people who receive postal votes return them very quickly, then I think that, you know, that is essentially not much time to stop Boris Johnson, given how massively far ahead he is amongst the members.
But the timing does matter, though. I mean, I was told by one contender yesterday he expects 10 days for the MPs to choose a final two, and after that, perhaps 5 weeks for the membership. But you think it could be shorter?
I think 5 weeks, 4 weeks, something like that. But the point is, in a way, the key point is when the ballot papers are sent out. And they will be sent out well in advance of the end of that 5 weeks. It's not like people go to a polling station and vote. They're sent a postal vote. And a lot of people, all the research shows, return their postal vote almost by return of post. They get it, they send it back. But I think one of the reasons why this Tory leadership contest is not entirely predictable, though, is just before Theresa May announced her resignation, Steve Baker, you know, the man who thinks of himself as the leader of the so-called Spartans, popped up on the BBC News Channel to essentially say that he was considering running for leader, and pointing out that both Boris Johnson and Dominic Raab had actually voted for Theresa May's deal at the third time of asking.
Impure Brexiteers.
And I think this is a reminder of the slightly unpredictable nature of this contest. I don't think Steve Baker is going to make the final two at all. But if Boris Johnson is to make the final two, I was talking to someone who's considering supporting him earlier this morning, and they were making the point that, you know, Boris Johnson needs to be materially ahead of Dominic Raab in round one. And I think if Steve Baker does stand, that probably helps Boris Johnson achieve that aim, because Dominic Raab is seen as a slightly more hardcore Brexiteer, and a Baker candidacy probably peels some numbers off Raab, obviously some numbers off Boris Johnson too, but probably less off Boris Johnson than Dominic Raab. So I think essentially the way to think about this Tory leadership contest is it's like a kind of Wimbledon tennis draw. There's a kind of Brexiteer side of a draw, and then there's a cabinet side of a draw. And right now, I think that Boris Johnson is the favourite to make the final from the Brexiteer side of a draw. And I think on the cabinet side of a draw, I think the question is whether Michael Gove can overhaul Jeremy Hunt or not.
So Katie, what can we expect? A speech from Michael Gove? A speech from Jeremy Hunt? Or would it be unseemly to make a speech until she goes later on?
Well, I think now it's a question of timing, isn't it? And you have a situation where you've had lots of these covert leadership campaigns that behind the scenes have been doing things, planting in speeches. But I sense that today the done thing is to take to social media or give out statements saying how much dignity you think Theresa May has shown in her role, rather than to get on the front foot and start saying what you plan to do on, you know, income tax if you would get that job.
And also, so we can expect proxies, can't we? I mean, we've seen Ed Vasey being sent out as a proxy for Michael Gove, so we can see a bit more of that.
Yeah, and already we're starting to see, even a way before, but as soon as Theresa May made that speech, every Conservative MP that is appearing on various broadcasters is saying who they are backing. You're starting to see quite quickly. And I think Dominic Raab and Boris Johnson are the two names that you're hearing the most. I mean, that's partly because they've been getting Brexiteers on. But I think we are starting to get an idea of what the numbers are for every campaign, because when there isn't officially a leadership contest, obviously each campaign can say they have a certain level of numbers, but no one quite believes them, because you speak to an MP who tells you they signed up to one group, then you speak to a supporter of a different group who tells you that MP has signed up to a different campaign, and you're like, well, that can't be right. So I think that's the point. I think we will start to see, obviously, in the weekend papers, not that different than what we've had the past 3 months, but interviews where various leadership candidates are trying to show they have what it takes. But there are some who think you can have a little bit of a truce over the recess period where campaigns can use that to get their campaigns in order rather than going public. But I do think as soon as one campaign decides not to play ball on that, you're suddenly going to get a very busy recess, because it only works if everyone's doing that.
I mean, James, with up to 17 candidates, depends on how you count them, the idea of a truce next week sounds unlikely. But how do you sense the numbers are right now? Because it's funny, that 2 or 3 months ago, I was told that there was no Stop Boris campaign anymore because Boris is such an unlikely candidate. Now we're told that he's so likely that it might be the case that he actually goes uncontested to the country because he stands such a great chance of winning. And it's very difficult, isn't it, at the moment, to work out who does have numbers. We know that Dominic Raab has got about a dozen or so people. But when it comes to Boris support, I was speaking to an MP who spoke to Boris recently, and he was telling him that he's listing the names of his supporters, people who are known to actually hate him. So he was listing people as supporters who don't support him. So how sure can we be right now as to who does have numbers for which
I think
MPs?
You might be making a category error. In a Tory leadership contest, there's nothing incompatible about someone hating someone and voting for them.
Right.
I would say one of the things that makes this difficult is, you know, this is the most sophisticated or most duplicitous electorate in the world, depending on how you want to think about it. And I also think lots of MPs are and ministers are changing their mind on an almost daily basis, because there is no perfect candidate in this contest. And the new leader needs to do three different things, right, don't they? Those three different things are take on Corbyn and Farage and be able to win an election. They need to be able to get something out of Brussels that makes this deal more palatable. And they need to be able to revive the Tory party's domestic agenda, which is completely in abeyance because of the failure of that 2017 manifesto. And so essentially, though, not one person is the same answer to all those three questions. If you were answering those three questions individually, you would answer with different names. And I think as people's view on the likelihood of an early election changes, people's view on their likely, you know, what attitude of the EU towards various people, all of these things are shifting around in people's heads. I think the interesting question now is this: is this contest is going to be relatively short, and it's on these two sides of the draws. You know, can Boris Johnson get far enough ahead of Dominic Raab in round one that Boris Johnson is clearly going to end up being the Brexiteer in the final two? And then on the other side of the draw, you know, Jeremy Hunt basically needs a mega showing in round one. Because the rumour amongst the other campaigns is that Jeremy Hunt's numbers are falling away. And if Jeremy Hunt, as the Foreign Secretary and, you know, the presumed cabinet frontrunner, disappoints in round one, then I think that cabinet side of the draw becomes a much more interesting contest.
Well, we'll bring you every twist and turn of that contest here on Coffee House Shots. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Cindy Yu, who produced the podcast. And also, if you have the time and inclination this weekend, we'd love to hear from you. If you can drop us an email at podcast@spectator.co.uk. We're thinking about how we do our podcast, so please do email to let us know what you like and don't like about these podcasts. Should they be longer? Should they be shorter? Should they be more frequent? And do you have any views in any of our other podcasts? Indeed, do you know we have other podcasts, and how might we do a better job of them spreading the word? So for those of you who, with the inclination, we really do value all the feedback you can give us, podcast@spectator.co.uk.